From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 17th, 2019. Checking the calendar, it's storytelling time with the X-Fabulous All-Stars Saturday night at Turner Hall. And it's Food Truck Sunday at the South Milwaukee Downtown Market. The Brewers are in Atlanta for the weekend, and the Bucks continue their series with Toronto. Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. Kansas, famous for the Wizard of Oz and tornadoes, has accidentally created a Second Amendment gun rights issue. Apparently, one way for some folks to deal with those twisters is to whip out their gun and shoot it. For some reason, the cops frown on that. A few gun-toting citizens insist it's a constitutional right. They're protecting life and property from killer storms. That makes me ask the question, how's that working for you, Sparky? And finally, we have a pop quiz for today. What's wrong with this newspaper headline? 6 of 11 rhesus monkeys successfully implanted with human brain genes have died. Of course, the answer is, if half your test group dies, is it really successful? In the studio today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Chris Evers, Kyle Tedding. And with a look at the week, here's Bob Landis.
Well, folks, after the steep plunge for stock prices on Monday, we recovered to end down just slightly for the week. NASDAQ lost 101 points this week, shedding 1.3% to close at 7816. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, S&P 500 shed 0.8%, losing 22 points to close at 2860. It's important we closed above the 50-day moving average on Thursday from a technical standpoint. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 0.7% this week, shedding 179 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 25,763. Kind of wobbly for the week, but year-to-date still doing pretty good. NASDAQ up 18.3% total return year-to-date. S&P up 15% for the year, including dividends. And the Dow is up 11.5. You know, Kyle, it was a fairly remarkable sell-off on Monday, led by the technology stocks. Apple is one example. They have a lot to lose with a trade war with China. And then it seemed during the middle of the week, investors got their wits about them and realized that, wow, it really is about earnings. We had fairly decent earnings announcements midweek, and the market recovered most of what it lost on Monday.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think investors are always looking for a narrative. They're always looking for something to pin today's move or yesterday's move on. And I think the reality is that it's far too simplistic to just look at the tariff issue that's out there right now and say that that's the only thing that's driving markets. Encouraged that we got a bit of a recovery midweek from what had been a pretty steep decline Monday. Encouraged that it was the earnings piece, I think, that really reinforced what we've known for a while, and that is that the market, that earnings continue to grow pretty slowly. That, we have had a bit of a pause recently, but that's not enough to strike much fear into investors.
Analysts are starting to figure out that China's got more to lose than the U.S. does because of the trade wars. They look at maybe tops a quarter point reduction in GDP here in the United States. I read a forecast from Capital Economics that suggested that China could be slowing to perhaps a 2% rate of growth in their GDP by the end of next year. That's quite a drop from where they're at right now, north of 6%.
Yeah, you know, the challenge always is trying to get a good sense of what the numbers really look like in China. Is it really 2% coming down from 7 or 8% of the years past, or is it really 2% coming down from what was more likely 4 or 4.5%? Just because China tends to control that information a little bit more closely than more open economies, more open markets. And so, maybe not as significant of a decline, and yet 2% is a pretty low number for what we've expected for so long from China that, I think it changes a little bit the dynamic of how investors look at overseas stocks. It changes the dynamic a little bit about how attractive U.S. stocks are relative to that.
Kyle, you and I talked earlier today about how it's partially about the tariffs, but it really is mostly about the slowdown in global growth. And I think the markets recognize that, that, you know, it isn't the tariff issue that is really going to hurt China. It's not the tariff issue that's really going to hurt the United States. I mean, if you think of our exports to China, it's less than 1% of GDP. Even if the number drops in half, it's not significant relative to our overall growth. But, you know, we have seen globally that growth is slowing here in the United States. Weaker retail sales that came out this week, weaker industrial production numbers that came out. You're starting to read forecasts of perhaps less than 2% GDP growth for the second quarter, down from 3.2% in the first quarter. So, you know, we're seeing a slowdown around the world that probably won't get fixed even if the tariff issue gets resolved.
Yeah, the consumer sentiment number this week maybe pointed to what the employment picture has produced for so long now that we've been, you know, at this very low unemployment rate. It's created quite a bit of confidence, created a lot of income coming in for families. And so you've got consumers right now that are pretty optimistic about the path ahead. And so, you know, that kind of stands in contrast to this global economy that's slowing, this idea that you know, maybe the economy here can hold up even if things slow down a little bit. And I think the one challenge and the thing that you pointed out to me earlier is that we tend not to see recessions come from one or two pieces of bad news. They come from a crisis of confidence. And so, you know, as I've, you know, really learned from you through that comment, that sentiment number is going to be key in what we see for consumer confidence, because if they're happy about the way the economy is going, if they're happy about the direction more broadly of the U.S., if they've got work, if they've got income coming in, you know, that typically speaks to an economy that isn't ready to just fall apart.
Dave, some of your thoughts?
Well, you know, you talk about that global economy kind of slowing down, Bob. I think it really brings to the forefront the importance of clients to not try to guess at when that next recession is going to hit and when that subsequent sell-off would occur. As we know, recessions are notoriously difficult to predict. And matter of fact, in a lot of instances, arguably half of them, of the worst sell-offs since the mid-70s, nobody saw them coming. And I think that's a reminder to people that, you know, don't think that you can just wake up one day and say, we got a recession coming in the next quarter or the next 6 months or whatever it may be. Very, very difficult to figure out when they're going to be showing up on your doorstep.
You know, as a trained economist, I can tell you that it's very difficult to predict recessions, but it is possible to predict trend lines. You know, so we saw GDP north of 3% last year. My guess is it's going to be 2-ish percent this year, probably something less next year. So we do get a clear sense of where we're heading, and, you know, the fact is that it's going down. To your point about the impossibility of trying to predict, it's part of what Kyle just mentioned, that it typically culminates in a crisis of confidence. I mean, go back to Y2K almost 20 years ago. Tech stocks were less than 10% of the market and the economy back then. But because they collapsed in price, a lot of people got freaked out, and people jammed on the brakes in spending. You know, look at the financial crisis. You know, housing isn't all that important, but the confidence was shot once people saw precipitous declines in the value of their homes. So, you know, it wasn't that the broader indications suggested that we're heading to trouble. It was this crisis of confidence, and that's what makes it so hard to predict. But I think that your comment's right on the money, because it's hard to invest based on trying to time the next downturn. I mean, if I had a guess, be sometime next year that we're going to probably slide into negative GDP. But I tend to view those as buying opportunities. I tend to look at, oh, yippee, stuff's on sale, assets that I've been wanting to add to portfolios become more attractively priced. And as we've discussed at length on this program, you know, the key is to make sure you have enough money in safe investments like bonds and cash to tide you over. It typically takes a couple of years for stock prices to come back, sometimes longer, sometimes less. But, you know, smart people have 5, 6, 7 years of their income needs sitting in cash and bonds. So you have the luxury of just waiting out the storm. Chris, let's bring you into the show. What are some of your thoughts on current events?
Yeah, and hearing from what Kyle had mentioned, the narrative of the market and what you're reading in the news, be it the trade war has, you know, caused the sell-off on Monday or whatever the story may be, it's important to remind yourself that it's all often these narratives that we as investors get focused on. But it's important to look beyond the narrative that's out there by the market and actually what you see in the data, what you see on valuations. You know, I think if people look back on this year's market and they saw that you're up 18%, I would argue that most people would not think that the narrative of the market this year has been a bull market of 18%. I think most people would think of this year as being characterized of, you know, the trade war and the sell-off in late last year. So I think it's important to look beyond what the narrative is out there and into what the actual data says.
You know, you take that a couple steps further. What we've seen in the United States is consumer confidence numbers. I mean, they're at a 15-year high right now. You look at the employment report that came out, unemployment 3.7. Boy, that's the lowest in decades and decades and decades. Created 260,000 new jobs last month. The six-month moving average for employment jobs, over 200,000 a month. I mean, those are huge numbers. You're seeing increases in wage gains. So, you know, when you look at the big picture, things look pretty good here in the United States. As we've said now for months, we've never had a recession in the United States that started overseas. But my guess is when you look at the slowdown globally, and then some of the weakness you're seeing here in the U.S., it's going to put some pressure on the estimates for earnings. You know, Kyle, you and I have talked about the earnings estimates for late in the year. That's why the market's up right now, is the earnings are supposed to look pretty decent late this year, and the market's reflecting that now.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think the challenge for so long was that we expected this earnings recession to come. We expected, especially first and second quarter, to look fairly weak, and yet what we've seen so far for the first quarter has been a number of big surprises, a number of companies that, you know, maybe not giving us a ton of guidance about what to expect for the rest of the year, in part because of the tariff talks that are going on, but in part because companies just don't do that anymore. But you've got now markets that are trading on a little bit better news for today, and more importantly, expectations that haven't shifted all that much from what was, you know, pretty typical growth for earnings, and so I think that's an encouraging sign for stocks.
And Kyle, to think about the fact that we're maintaining those types of projections this in an expansion that's this long, I mean, we're looking at entering into the 11th year of this expansion later this summer, and you look across the board, Bob, some of the things you talked about, and generally the absence of inflation, a lot of things that don't necessarily coincide with a late cycle expansion. You'd expect to see more of that inflation kind of rearing its head and a little bit more downward pressure possibly on earnings. So there are some of those things that, and as you said, reflected in that consumer confidence number.
Chris, I'm remembering not long after you joined the firm that you did some pretty interesting research on emerging markets, and back then they called them some of the frontier markets, mm-hmm. Principally in Africa. And, you know, I read that valuations in emerging markets against U.S. prices are the lowest in over 30 years. And, you know, it seems that they continue to struggle. It seems that the returns have been dismal. They remain dismal. And, you know, longer term, we all know that demographic growth fuels economic growth. And in many emerging markets, they've got that demographic growth as, you know, wind to their back, so to speak. So what are some of your latest thoughts there?
Well, I think in any market that, frankly, doesn't have the appreciation of global investors, it's going to take a major change in perception of those economies. From the investing community, before you would see a huge growth in the assets. So one, you know, you could look at valuations and say valuations look unbelievably attractive. It's important to remember there's an incredible amount of risk in those markets, due to governance issues, and maybe the markets don't even operate properly and the exchange is 10 guys sitting around writing on a piece of paper. But there are incredible opportunities there, but it has to be taken very carefully. And it's going to take a major change in the perception of the way that those markets are seen and the confidence for essentially investors globally to appreciate that there's opportunities there to be had.
You know, then you look at Turkey and Argentina struggling, an enormous amount of indebtedness. Of course, in Argentina, the debt is publicly held. In Turkey, it's mostly privately held. So different dynamics there. But with the dollar continuing to strengthen and emerging markets having borrowed primarily in dollar terms since the financial crisis, stronger dollar means you just owe more money to the bankers. And the pressure keeps building on countries like Argentina and Turkey. Clearly, they're outliers, but it's indicative of some of the broader problems in the emerging world. And longer term, boy, that's going to be the place to be. But short term, it just keeps getting uglier. And I keep getting a little bit more cautious relative to my attitude there.
Yeah, just to add to that, Bob, you know, I think there's an incredible amount of asymmetry of information when you look at the emerging world, when you look at these companies that exist, even in, you know, fairly well-developed countries like China. Not every investor has the same information that maybe the pros do about these companies. And so it's a very different game than investing here in the U.S. or much of the rest of the developed world where, yeah, maybe you could buy a really low-cost index and do all right. When you look at the emerging world, when you look at especially some of those less well-developed countries, some of those countries with risks, Chris, that you mentioned, it becomes incredibly important to partner with someone who understands those risks. It becomes incredibly important to become more active in what you're doing and not simply rely on, well, okay, we're going to buy this China index or this India index, because there's a lot of companies in there that aren't going to be around long enough for you to really make your money back. And so if there's a lot of winners and losers, that's fine if you can differentiate between the two. I think, you know, the difference in the emerging world is that it's far more difficult to differentiate between those winners and losers.
In the few minutes that we have left on the show, let's switch gears and talk about bonds. We're interviewing a fairly prominent bond manager this coming Monday. Bonds have had a really good run this year, you know, and I think that surprised a lot of folks with interest rates going down. Late last fall, the Fed was expected to raise rates 3-4 times. This year, nobody thinks that. Pretty good chance that they're going to lower at least once, probably twice, late this year. So it's really set the stage for a fairly dramatic rally in fixed income. Kyle, what are some of your thoughts now?
Yeah, you know, especially with the rhetoric around the Fed's decisions recently, with the number of politicians that have come out with an opinion on what the Fed should be doing, which is a pretty drastic shift from years gone by, where for the most part politicians stayed out of what the Fed was doing, the Fed stayed out of what the politicians were doing. I think there's a lot of reason to be really encouraged about what bonds have done so far, but also the expectation that if we do get those one or two rate cuts, that bonds might have a little bit of room here still. And I think the one thing to remember about bonds, as opposed to stocks, as opposed to other things you can invest in, is that as long as you're buying quality, as long as you're paying a fair price for them, ultimately you get your money back in the end. And so these bonds have this feature called par, where you get par back when the bond matures. And for bond investors, the most important thing to remember is that at some point in time in the future, you know what that bond's supposed to be worth. And so if you're buying high quality, if you're focused on, not overpaying for stuff, it's pretty easy to say, here's where we expect to be a few years from now.
And it's amazing how fast that changed, Bob, to your point. Fed futures markets right now are pricing a 26% chance of 2 decreases this year. Now, if you would have made that prediction 12 months ago, you probably would have got laughed out of the room. And in a situation last year where the Fed was aggressively raising rates, those very, very short-term bonds were the place to hide out in. This year, if we're looking at the things very stable or even going down, you know, maybe beefing up your intermediate bonds might be even a little bit better place to hide out.
And the fact that we're still paying the price of the rate hike in December. I mean, it takes almost a year for the markets to absorb the effect of those higher rates. So it's pretty interesting to me to see that the timing is such that, you know, we're still going to be bearing the weight of higher rates at the time to start lowering the rates. Well, folks, this is the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.